This podcast is brought to you by Ramsden Recruitment. It's episode 13 of Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast. Let's go! And with summer finally upon us and seasonal businesses up and down the country in full flow, we thought it'd be an interesting chat to chat with one of Scotland's most celebrated chefs, none other than Callum Montgomery, chef owner at Edinbane Lodge in the Isle of Skye. I was lucky enough to host Callum at HRC earlier this year as he delivered an absolute masterclass of shellfish cookery while showcasing that he's absolutely one of our industry's personalities. And he brings his A-game on energy to our chat, as well as some cracking insight into the life of an island chef and business owner. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and come right on in. Hello and welcome to Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast, hosted as ever by me, Phil Streets. Now, sometimes you're just lucky enough to cross paths with somebody who I think we're always born to have a conversation like this with, for many, many reasons. We'll kind of get into that, I guess, as we get chatting away, but it gives me massive pleasure to welcome Callum Montgomery to the show.
Hello, Phil. Thank you so much for having me. Cool to be here.
You're very welcome. How's life?
It's pretty busy just now, peak season for Skye at the moment, so pretty busy, but delighted to make a wee bit of time for this, because not like listening to the podcast, and pleasure to have a conversation with yourself. So
top man. Well, I mean you just kind of alluded to where you are in the world, so we might as well just get straight into it in terms of just tell the world where you are, what you do.
Yeah, no worries. So my name's Callum Montgomery. I am the chef owner of a four-rosette, five-star restaurant with rooms in the Isle of Skye. It's called Edinbane Lodge. We bought the property in 2017 between myself and my family. Full sort of nine-month refurbishment of the property and reopened in August 2018 as a restaurant with rooms. Beforehand, it was just a historic lodge, really, dating back to 1543. Been through many different guises in its lifespan, being a family home, a coaching inn, a lodge, a courthouse actually at one point as well. But we sort of rebranded it as a restaurant with rooms with a real focus on fine dining, using the best of local island and highland produce with a real emphasis on prime produce as well. And it's what we've been at for the past 7 years now, but in our current form, I've never been more proud of the entire team that's here and never been more sort of confident with our sort of cooking style and what we offer to our guests. And in my eyes, we just keep going from strength to strength, and certainly that's what our guest feedback is as well. So yeah, had the opportunity to meet yourself down at HRC and talking there. Had a couple of beers, and it'd be nice to have a a recorded conversation this time as well.
Yes, but, no beer is in hand, although it is the weather for it. So it's very, very tempting, but no, coffee only today. But
absolutely. Probably for the best too.
Absolutely. What I loved about that actually was you were like a wide-eyed puppy in the sense you were in London and you were, I am maximizing my time here. And yeah. I remember the phone calls going around the table that we were at, like just trying to get you tables at places and things like that. And some of the food experiences that you had, I think all of them exist on my must-do list at some point.
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean, it's certainly not my first time to London, but I actually try to go as much as I can. I think it's absolutely the sort of food capital of the world. There's so much buzz around the place. I love London just as a whole. It's just a complete polar opposite to Skye. I always think
really?
The whole city. a wee bit. But I always just think the whole city is actually like a kitchen. You know, like even when you're going throughout like the underground or everything, you know, everyone's organized, everyone's like jumping about, everyone's getting in each other's way. I love the hustle and bustle of it. And I just try to eat in as many places as I can, have a few drinks in a few places as I can, and meet up with people as well, fellow chefs and people that I've maybe worked with before and things like that. But I just try to cram as much into there as I can. I've had two or three dinners in one night before, actually. I'll go for breakfast, I'll go for lunch, I'll go for dinner, I'll go for dinner, I'll go for supper.
I think it's a very really long important. Run the next day.
Yeah, or just a really uncomfortable plane journey. Yeah. But no, I think it's really important as a chef, as a business owner as well, but particularly as a chef, just to see what other people are doing, expand your palate as much as possible and taste what other people are doing and look around. I love eating as a single diner anyway. I love people watching, even if it's service, if it's like not in a weird way, like people watching, but like seeing.
Don't have that caveat.
But I mean, like if you're trapped in a kitchen anyway, to see how guests actually react to certain dishes going down and see what they're looking for, see what their wait times are when they're looking around and thinking like, oh, I could do with another dish around a bit now. This is taking a wee while. I think that's really important to even, you know, for us working primarily as a tasting menu, is timing, I think, is everything. I've been for so many tasting menus that it will be really slow and some that are really quick. And I think it's quite a good thing to nail on is like actually your time between courses. And, you know, singles will eat a lot faster than twos will, than fours will, and things like that anyway. Mm. But sitting in a restaurant of whether it's 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, whatever, and looking around and actually seeing what's going on, I always think it's really sort of beneficial, as well as everything that you eat while you're there. And it's always going to be banging, so you're pretty happy to have the experience and go back up the road. And I can always take an experience there and try to implement it on our menu as well, you know, whether it's the silliest things, whether it's putting more drapes in the dining room, whether it's adding another decoration to the table, whether it's taking something away off a plate that didn't need to be there. I think it's just it's really cool. I do that with London, or whether it's, you know, anywhere else in the world, but London's probably one of the places that I visit the most.
Yeah, I can totally get that. Like, I mean, that's how you evolve as well, right? You run the risk if you are just doing the same thing the same time over and over again, is that one day people go, yeah, kind of had that before.
Yeah, but it's also good to look at what you're doing and just if you've already got something that's really good and just how you can improve it. You know, like when we first opened the restaurant here, I was just like, sorry, I'm going to totally go off on one here if you want.
unleash.
This is funny because I knew you were going to ask me a question about something later, so I was actually going to answer with this, but I'll just go straight into it because this is quite funny. So, like,
I mean, that's a set up and a half, by the way. You've now, yeah, there we are, go. Prepped. We're ready.
Oh, dude. Pull my pants down live on there. No, we, when we opened here, it was my big focus just to use as much Sky produce as we could. And if something was from Sky, it's going on the menu. And I wanted to be working with all sorts of stuff, you know, whether it's mackerel, whether it's lobster, whether it's langoustine, whether it's octopus, whether it's conger eel, whatever. I was like, it's from Sky. Somebody's sending me a message. I'm putting it on the menu and I'm sending it. And I was super proud of it and amazing. And I was, you know, looking back, I'm still proud of it. But I look at what we do now, and we put a real focus on prime ingredients. We put a real focus on, you know, whether it's yourself, whether you're coming up and you might only eat here once. Am I going to be really, really proud serving you? Well, I probably would be. Still really proud serving you conger eel. But is that the best thing that's coming from Sky? You know, I really, truly believe that we've got like the best lobster in the world. I feel we've got the best scallops in the world, the best crab, the best langoustine, the best squat lobster. I want people to come here and leave with what we do the best and what we can access the best. If you look around about these restaurants I was just talking about in London, a big key word, and you see in a lot of these top places, is actually Sky. You'll see like hand-dive Sky scallops, you'll see Sky langoustine, you'll see sort of stuff like that.
Yeah.
You see it hand-in-hand with a lot of other places in Scotland, because I really believe Scotland has the best shellfish in the world. When we first opened, I was like, right, let's change the menu every week. Let's change it. And it would go top to bottom, like 10 courses. Like every bread would change, every butter would change, every canopy would change, everything. And we were doing it because it was exciting and it was really cool. And I loved it and it was really challenging. But what's become even more challenging for me now and more interesting and more refined is that we can take like, right, what are all these dishes that we've done over the years? What are our best ones and how can we make them better? So we've actually turned our restaurant more into like, rather than something that changes every week or every 2 weeks or whatever. It's like a signature menu now, really. That sounds a bit wanky saying that. It's like signature, but it is. It's like, if people are coming to eat with us, I know they're going to leave having like, not saying it's the way that we've cooked them, but the core ingredients of the produce. I know they're going to get the best scallops in the world. I know they're going to get the best lobster in the world. I know they're going to get the best crab. And it's what we do with it. And we change things seasonally, like purees and garnishes and sauces and things like that. But those main proteins and those main like star attractions stay the same there. So as much as you're saying you don't want to change too much, what we're doing instead now is we're just looking like, this is why I was saying this before, is like I look at everything as a guest, not so much as a chef. I'm like, if I'm coming to Sky and I'm not from here, what am I thinking is in the drive up? You know, people immediately think shellfish. So we've got a very shellfish heavy menu. And then they're thinking about, you know, like they're driving past the hills and the Merlins and the sea and everything. And all of our menu is influenced by wee bits and pieces there. So you wouldn't find any avocado in our menu. You wouldn't find any passion fruit in our menu or things like that.
No, there might be a sit not in Sky yet.
but I also, you know, before tried to look at like, oh well, if it's not Scottish, it's not going on the menu. If it's not British, so you tempt it with the things like, oh, we're not going to use lemon juice. We'll make some sort of vinegar out of this and stuff. But instead, if it's going to highlight the produce, if it's going to make that key ingredient sing, we do it. And I make sure that there's something from Sky on every single course, and there's something there that highlights Sky. And what I always say to people here now as well, like, our biggest competition is the landscapes, and our biggest competition is the experience of Sky. So I really want people to come here thinking about, oh, I want to see the Old Man of Stour, I want to see the fairy pools, I want to go to the Kerrang. But I want them to leave thinking about, oh, we had this amazing crab dish at Edinburgh Lodge, or I want to go back to have that scallop again, or I want to go back to taste that pre-dessert again, or those strawberries that they grew in their polytunnel, all sorts of things. And that's why we just look into the refinement there, that I try to think like, so much of our clientele is tourism. We do a lot of locals as well, and I love them coming in, and it's great, and it's so cool to know that we have the local support. But I know that probably about 80% of our clientele all year, they're probably going to dine with us once and never again. So I really want it to be like, you know, come here and really remember it, and I want it to be a memorable experience. And we've proper changed that in the past few years, and I love it. But we don't just stick to what we know. So that's where these sort of experiences away will come back and be like, oh, why don't we just like tweak that a wee bit, and that's going to make that a wee bit better. Can we make it better? And it's always going to keep evolving. I love looking back on my phone or looking back on TripAdvisor or Instagram and stuff like that. Cringe a wee bit as well, but I like looking back and see how far we've come. But it's cool.
That's also important though, right? I mean, obviously you have to have focus forward as a business, but there's also real merit in taking a moment to just remind yourself as to what you were on day one to what you are today.
It's a very good sort of like humbling thing as well, because you can think that you're like doing really well. So I already think like, okay, we're doing pretty well just now. But if I can look back now to like 5 years and see how far ahead we are now from where we are there, I'm just even more excited for another 5 years from now, because I know we're just going to keep going. We're not sticking at stalemate. I'm challenging the guys all the time. They're challenging me. The guests are challenging, you know, like we're wanting to get better all the time. We're wanting to keep pushing boundaries. We're wanting to just elevate that experience all the time. And whether that's through like a small refurb, whether that's changing crockery, slightly changing garnishes, looking at like what can make its way up. There's always dish development going on in the background and stuff. But we have to question it as well. It's like, okay, is that going to be good enough to come on instead of there? Is that going to be, you know, but it's all about the guest experience at the end. And it's all about like, okay, that was really good. Let's leave here and let's come back, because it's a big thing to ask people to come back to Sky. It's not like it's a good far away from where you're staying now. And it's a thought for people. I say it to people all the time. And like, even when I'm down in London, I'm like, oh, you need to come see us. And I'm like, oh, it's so far away. It's a plane. It's a train. It's a car. We need to get somewhere to stay also. But, you know, once you're here, you wouldn't regret it. I know Scenic Sky is like the best place in the world. If you see it today, like, it's just blistering sunshine. I think it's the greatest place in the world when it's a good day.
You don't have to twist a. I mean, I grew up on an island as well. My whole of my secondary school on Tyree, and you know, when you get a sun-kissed day, there's nowhere more beautiful in the world. Like, you
it's
know,
inspiring the, too. It really is. Like, it's like so many people say to me, it's like, oh, where do you get ideas from dishes and stuff like that? It's like, even like yesterday, like I was out with one of the chef's parties, and we were just foraging for mushrooms and blaberries and sea veg and stuff like that. It's just easy. It's really easy to be inspired by it. It's like, okay, this goes with this. This goes with this. You know, like the midges are killing you. You want to get back into the kitchen anyway, but you want to get as much produce as you can while you're there because it's free.
Yeah.
But it's so easy to get inspired by stuff that's growing in the wild that's delicious as well. I mean, like I don't get caught into the trap of like, all right, well, it's foraged, so we have to use it. You know, like you can forage for dandelions. It doesn't mean you have to take them back to the restaurant and cook them. But the things like chanterelle mushrooms, like that's the first of our season yesterday. And like, honestly, from the second of them like hitting the pan yesterday to them going on the plate, like I'm jealous of the diners. Yeah. I think that's really cool. And that's cool as a chef as well.
That is cool.
Shit, I wish I was eating in the restaurant.
But you know, I suppose that keeps your your passionate mind alive as well. Like, because if there's one day where you wake up and you're not feeling that, like, then you probably have to question, right, is my direction correct? Because it has to start with what would you like, right? I mean, what would you like to eat? And you kind of go down that route as well.
So I'm in a very fortunate position that I'm the chef owner of Edinbane Lodge. So I'm a business partner with my father. He's the main investor behind the entire business. But he's not just investing here because I'm his son. He's investing here because, like, I grafted throughout my career to then have a vision for this type of restaurant, to go into this, to deliver this sort of experience. He's not into fine dining. He's not, you wouldn't catch him, like, going into, you know, a different one Michelin star, two Michelin star restaurant, or going away to stay in another 5-star restaurant or rooms. He loves steaks. He loves tapas. He loves, like, all sorts of stuff. He loves, like, American food. So do I. I love it too. But my passion is fine dining. My passion is Scottish produce. I'm super passionate about what we do. But I also know if I was to lose the passion for this, which I don't think I'm going to anytime soon, but I really could just change tomorrow and open up a fish and chip restaurant. I could turn this into a burger joint tomorrow. I could turn this into a steakhouse tomorrow. But it's not what I'm about, and it's not what we're about. I want to deliver people memorable experiences when they come here. I want to show off Sky. That's what this restaurant's about. I want to show off Sky. Be like, this is what we've got here. Come and see it here. But I also want to create, I also always wanted to create somewhere that I would really want to work myself when I'm in my 20s, when I'm in my early teens, and then older as well, to be appreciated while you're here, to have a good work-life balance, to be able to work with amazing produce, be able to be respected while you're here, and also just to be really proud to be able to bump into somebody in the co-op or, like, local supermarket or the pub or whatever, and be like, you know, I work at this place, and really have, you know, like, it can be like, you can be peacocking to them, like, literally, like, and I believe that with their staff as well. They're delighted to work here. They're delighted to get involved here. They're delighted to be doing everything we do. And they're passionate. And that's what gets me going as well. It's like, I know if I'm dropping a bit, I need to lift it for helping them, and they help me back and stuff. It's really cool. But what I'm going back to here is just like, I don't need to be doing a 10-course tasting menu with Sky seasonal produce. I do it because I love it. And if I wanted to start serving pizzas tomorrow, I don't really need to speak to anybody about whether I would be doing that instead. Mm. We could be doing slider burgers on Saturday, and that's fine. And that is what I'm saying. I'm in this fortunate position, is that it's so cool. Like, I think we'd probably have a really successful business if we did start doing burgers and we did start doing steaks or whatever. But this is what I want to do. This is what I get out of bed for in the morning. This is everything to me. This is like my life. This is why I'm desperately saying to people whenever I see them, you need to come and see us, see this. And primarily I'm saying to people, like, come and see Sky. But if you have the opportunity, come in, eat with us, stay with us, relax with us, and then leave. I used to hate bumping into people like, oh, we went to Sky and we had this really crappy experience and we had this and we had this. Because some of it, not naming anywhere, some of it's a total tourist trap. Because they'll just put this...
But, like, that's the same everywhere.
It's everywhere. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Fresh, local produce, and you go in and everything's just bought and it's crap. But there's so many places now, and more than ever, that, you know, like, they know what they're doing. They're doing it for the right reasons. And I think, like, as diners for, like, anywhere in the UK are just enjoying everything more than I think the food scene, and I mean, I can only speak for however long I've been in the industry, I've been alive, but, like, I even think back, like, 10 years ago, the variations and the variety they have throughout the UK is incredible. Mm. And you see it more in Scotland more than ever. Like, it's so cool. There's so many different influences everywhere, but people care so much more than ever, I think. I think there's, you can be caught out so easily. Like, people know their shit now, like, through Netflix or through, you know, whatever. It's like, where does your food come from? And that should always be the bare bones for anybody looking into it. It's like, where does it come from? Let's create a dish from there. And that's where we always go for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you get to say, where does it come from? Just over there.
we can name drop them. Like, we can say the name of the boat. We can say, I can tell you when the guy's birthday is. Not that it's in my car, but but, like, I can tell you what our suppliers' kids' names are. I can tell you what our suppliers, I could point to where their house is. You know, like, our suppliers I've went to school with, I've been drinking with them in the pubs, and then been like, oh, well, do you want to start taking lobster for me? Do you want to get crayfish? And things. And then that's how relationships start there. Yeah. I say to people all the time, we don't have like a we don't have like a printed A4 sheet paper next to the phone or whatever in the kitchen with our suppliers list. It's like my Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp and Instagram private messages. It's like that. Yeah. So that's, it's cool. And it's, when we first opened, it was like, all of our suppliers are Callum's friends and family throughout the year. But we've also just added on so many people throughout the years that are round about Sky with, they're like, we're rearing lamb. We'd love for it to be on a new restaurant. And then jump out to them, see the farm, like, okay, absolutely, bring it in. And then we get the whole beasts and break them down. And then the staff get it, staff meets and stuff like that as well, which is cool.
Right. Cool. Yeah. There's still loads of stuff I need to get into. We haven't even touched your journey yet in terms of, because obviously you started...
Sorry, I'm an absolute waffler.
It's awesome. you're preaching to the converted, or well, it depends on what day you get me, but you know, it's the Billy Connolly school of discussion, which is that you have a core point that you want to talk about, but there's probably 20 other things that we could talk about to get to something. That's all we're doing. But so you've had Edinburgh Lodge since 2017. You obviously didn't wake up as a chef and go, I'm having Edinburgh Lodge. So what happened before that in terms of how did you get into the industry in the first place, and kind of just talk us through your journey back to where you are now?
Yeah, no worries. So I'm 35 now, feeling every bit of it.
But look, a day over 25, mate.
It's just my facial hair shows that off. I can't grow a beard at all. I grew up in Portugal. I'm born and bred Sky, anyway. But I started my first few years in Braes, and then moved into Portree, which is where my mum and dad are from, anyway. So my ancestors go back in Sky, like, hundreds of years, either side. Grew up there.
You're a blooded islander.
Yeah, there we go. Can't definitely related to probably everyone in the island somehow. That's why I've got such big ears.
Such a stereotypical joke to make, isn't it, about island life?
Yeah, a joke, wink, wink. So, yeah. Joking. I am joking. I hope. I haven't done my ancestry, but I'll check it out.
you don't need to know. Just focus forwards.
So I started... So my dad used to have like a janitorial business. So I watched him grow his business from the ground up, basically. We lived in a caravan in Braes as he was starting to sort of find his feet in the business world. He was a baker by trade, actually, my dad. And then he went off to work offshore as a chef. He was working on the Piper Alpha, actually, before it went up. So he worked offshore on the rigs and he was chefing there. And then he came back to Sky and he spotted a niche in the market for a cleaning company, just doing specialist cleaning carpets and things like that. And he started it just himself with a van and a carpet cleaner, and I'd be sort of like 4 or 5 years old and seeing him going out to work each day sort of thing. Fast forward sort of 9 years and we'd moved into Portree, 8 years, and once I wanted to start working, I started working with him, just helping along. By this time, he had about 50 employees. So really, really built up the business quite a bit. So in the summer holidays, I started just working for cash, sort of topping up the carpet cleaner, mopping floors, brushing floors sort of things. But I was working for my dad and I thought, okay, the next year, so I started work at 13. The next year at 14, I applied to a local hotel, which was just around the corner from my mom and dad's house where I grew up, which was a Tour Rosette restaurant. I just started as a kitchen porter. It's about £3.25 an hour, doing split shifts on the weekend, working just about every other night throughout the week. Just did it pot washing, dishwashing. I was terrible at it, like really, really bad. but loved it. Thought it was really cool within the kitchen. Never thought it as a career, like at all. Just like hard graft. Like there's nothing too glamorous about washing dishes, washing pots anyway. Stayed at it for about a year and a half. And then I actually did a summer front house. So I think this is why I'm usually pretty sympathetic towards front house. It's just they were short there. And I thought, oh, well, if you're looking for someone there, I'll go out. And I just sort of waited on tables in the bar and the restaurant and things. I really liked it, speaking to guests and things like that. But I jumped back into the kitchen. And then they were short chef-wise. So I started out just doing salads and starters and things like that for bar meals. But we also had a bar which did about 90 covers in the Cone Hills. And then we also did a restaurant which did about 45 covers of the Tour Rosette restaurant, which at the time was the best place in Portree. And it was really cool working in there. But I was really inspired by my dad about how he had started from a caravan up to sort of like 50 employees. By this point, it was about 70 employees. And he was over in the north of Scotland. So at that point, I was like, I want to work for my dad. I want to let him retire. I want to take over the business. So I was pretty good at business management in school. So I went away to, I left Skye and went away to college in Glasgow to study an HND in business management. So I'd left my job, obviously, at the Cohen Hills, and I started doing it, and I was really enjoying it, but and my end goal was there, was getting HND in business management, come back, let him retire, I'll run the business sort of thing. But about 9 months into my course, I think it was the Easter holidays, came back to the Cohen Hills, who are really short-staffed, and the team that I'd been working with there, a lot of them had left, and my head chef, Robert, at the time, trusted me. I'd been there for sort of 3 years. And he said to me, he was like, do you want shifts? I'll give you chefing shifts, but I'll give you more stuff to do. Because I knew sort of the standards that were there and seen sort of agency chefs coming in, not doing the best of jobs. So I was getting treated with more responsibility. And I was like, this is quality. Like, I was allowed to cook fish and I was allowed to do pigeon and things like this. And it really lit a spark under me. I was like, wow, I actually really enjoy this. And all of a sudden, didn't really want to go back to my college course. So I went back, I tried it, and I was like, I just don't want to do this. I don't want an office job. I actually had no idea how much I liked chefing. And I didn't know how much I liked it until I stopped it. I loved the kitchen. I loved cooking. I loved the teamwork. I loved everything about it. So I had a big phone call down in Glasgow with my mom and dad, and I was like, look, I just don't think I'm going to carry this on. Like, this is what I was saying earlier, like, if my head's not in something, I'm not doing it. Like, I can't get into it. I need to love what I'm doing.
Well, that's an important message in itself, though, to be honest, because there's a lot of times, and I've totally been guilty of this in my life as well, where you do something because you can do it, not necessarily because it gets the best out of you.
And, like, I'm very confident, like, I could have finished that course and, like, it. God knows what I would end up doing. What's really cool, I mean, like, really skipping ahead. No, I'll get to it in a minute. But, like, I jumped back, basically, and I was like, I left Glasgow and I moved back up. And actually, I mean, there's a bit of an underlining story here as well. I started going out with a girl from Skye who was, this is now, like, 17 years ago, who's now my wife. So I moved back to choosing Skye.
Fairly important girl, then.
Yeah, well, a wee side note there. So we'd started going out before, sort of thing, and then I came back, and I was seeing her back in before anyway. But I moved back, but it was for her, but it was also really because I was like, okay, well, I'm really going to be a chef here. So I had this conversation with sort of my folks and stuff. My dad said to me at the time, he was like, well, if you're going to be a chef, you better be, like, a good one. Like, you better give it your all. And I said, look, if I'm coming back, like, I'm giving this everything. Because it was a big decision for me at the time, and I literally said to myself, it's like, I'm going to be a chef, I'm going to be, like, the absolute best one that I can be. So I came back, started the Cohen Hills, as like a chef to party now, came back, and I gave it a year. I was picking up bad habits, and it wasn't the pinnacle of where I wanted to go. I really enjoyed it, like, loved it. Couldn't say anything better about my time at Cohen Hills. But I had bigger sort of aspirations at the time as well, and I wanted to jump back down to Glasgow, and I loved living in Glasgow. So my girlfriend at the time there, Ailey, as I said, is now my wife, but we both moved back down to Glasgow, and she was working in a hotel as well, so she studied to be a chef as well. So we moved back down and went to what was at the time the Metropolitan College, and I basically went to college there, and I got skipped ahead a year actually because I'd already been kind of chefing for a couple of years, and I applied to work in what was the best restaurant at the time in Glasgow, which was One Demetry Gardens. I applied everywhere over Glasgow actually and just didn't get a job anywhere, but that was my number one place that I wanted to get a job, and I got a phone call from Chef Paul Tamburini, who was definitely the most exciting chef cooking in the city at that time, jumped in, started there at the time doing my college work and working at One Devonshire. So studying professional cookery, jumping in there, doing probably about 80 to 100 hours a week on top of doing a college course. But it was amazing. It made me question everything. It literally deleted everything that I'd already learnt. Worked for him, worked my sort of way up. We had a switch of chefs in between there for 2 years. So he left after 2 years and Darren Campbell came in after there. So he was previously Andrew Fairley's head chef when they got 2 stars at Glen Eagles. And then he went to Balco's house and he got a Michelin star for himself there. And then he came to One Devonshire Gardens. So really inspiring working with him. I've always said to people, it's like working in two just completely different kitchens, like just very different personalities, very different cooking styles, but it's almost as if I was working in two completely different places. Luckily, I just knew where my section was. So completely different dishes, completely different food style. From there, I was there for about 4 years. And then I came back up just to do some work experience at King Auch Lodge in the Isle of Skye, because my mother-in-law was working there as a housekeeper at the time. So they had got a Michelin star in 2009. So I think this is about 2013 by this point. And I just asked, like, can I come in and do a stage? Came in and worked for Marcelo Tully there. So he was Michelin star chef there. He was trained by the Roux brothers. And really sort of opened my eyes again, just a just completely different food style to anything that I'd ever really seen. So he was, he's Brazilian. So he had Brazilian influences, but he was really classically French trained as well. So there was just like wild stuff going on, but stuff that made sounded as if it didn't make sense, but when you taste it, made the most sense in the world. So you would see it maybe on Instagram or Twitter or something, you'd be like, what on earth's going on there? And then you taste it, it'd be amazing. It'd be really, really cool. So even going back to like passion fruit, so he would be using stuff like that, which made total sense for his sort of food style.
Yeah.
You know, passion fruit's a huge sort of Brazilian thing. So he would have like, you'd have like monkfish with like lime and coconut sauce and things like that. And it would be really cool, like really, really nice. So I came up, did the stage, I think it was for about 3 days, and he offered me a job when he was there. And I didn't think I was ready to move back to Sky, but actually we were, my wife was, actually she's now my fiance at this time. So we made the decision, right, we're leaving Glasgow, came back up to Sky. And yeah, it was really cool. Worked at King Loch for like 3 years. 4 years actually. So I started a chef to party and actually made my way up to second chef, sous chef. Left, had an opportunity to go away to another restaurant in Sky called Ulanish Lodge. So that was a 5-star restaurant with rooms. So only 26 at the time, and managed to get 3 rosettes there straight away, which was, I think at the time, I was maybe one of the youngest chefs in Scotland with that accolade. So very, very cool. Got a huge amount of experience out of just running my own kitchen. It was just myself and my sous chef, Louis. No KPE or anything like that. We do sort of like 20 covers a night. I was there for a year, and King Loch actually invited me to come back as head chef, as Marcelo took a sort of more of a directorial role within the business. He was writing his own cookbook and things like that. So I jumped back. It was always a really, really good place to work, King Loch. Like I really appreciated my time there. But when I came back, it wasn't a step back for me by any means, because I really, really liked my time there, but I don't think it was a step forward, because I just jumped out into doing my own thing, and then I was going back underneath somebody again.
Yeah.
So my sort of creative juices were flowing, and I was really, really keen to do as much as I could do by myself. So I don't regret going back by any means, and I loved working Marcel. It was really good. So he was just an absolute gentleman. And then we built this like amazing team there over at King Loch, and then it was really good. I had a good year, but then the opportunity came up. My dad, by this point, had sold his business, and then he was kind of ready to like invest in me, and I had no idea. Like I'd never pitched it to him or anything. I was like, oh, I want my own place. It was never like that. Mm. He spotted this. He had sold his business by this point with like 100 employees. He was all over Scotland. So it was really cool. Like I said, I've just got endless amounts of respect for him. He's my total hero. So he said to me one day, he's like, oh, do you want to go for a pint at this place in Edinburgh? I was like, okay. And then we came to this place that I'd never even known existed. And I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear here, but it was the biggest shithole I've ever seen in my life. It was just like, the place was falling down. Like, it was built in 1543. You didn't think the place had a touch of paint since 1643. We came in for a beer and it was awful. And he was kind of like looking across from me, and like, he hadn't even mentioned this to me at all. And he was like, what do you think? And I was like, what, here? I was like, hold on, I'm going to go to the toilet first, and came back. And it was probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had. And then came out, and he was like, yeah, so do you think you can see yourself like cooking in there? And I was like, what? I'm not like leaving King Loch to apply here. He was like, no, not apply. Like, do you want to go into business together? And it just blew my mind. And I was like, I can't see it at all. Like, I wasn't sure if I was ready for my own place, but I absolutely wanted to be doing my own thing. Mm. So like, he pitched it to me, and I was like, well, that's like really scary. He was like, oh no, it's not going to take that much. You know, like there's a bit of patch in here and there's a bit of this. And like, my dad's the most like positive, enthusiastic guy you could meet anyway. He's like, oh, it's easy to do that. It's fine, whatever. And he totally sold me on it. And then we went ahead with it. There was a bit of sort of negotiating about what the price would be. They had sort of one thing in their mind about how much it was worth, and we could kind of look at it and be like, well, I don't think so, because we're going to have to put so much into this to be here. And it took a lot. I think it was probably like 4 months of negotiations, I think. And then we got the keys in sort of like November 2017. I hung up my whites for 9 months and literally just put on like the oldest pair of clothes, put on the oldest pair of clothes that I had. And we aimed to be open for like April. And instead, it was August. So it was a serious, serious job. And that was just the ground floor. So all we got open in that time, like it was all local tradesmen. So it was like me and my dad literally on site 7 days a week. Like, my dad's like the most proactive sort of guy you can meet. And he was like, right, well, we're not asking somebody else to do that. Like, I'll do that sort of thing, which isn't always the best idea anyway. Maybe you should get some sort of trained professional to do it. But we jumped in and it was like, I called us like Team Destruction, because we were just coming down, hitting down every single internal wall that was going. Literally the only thing that's left here from when we bought the place is the external walls, which are 485 years old.
Yeah, well, they remain for a reason, right? Because they're still
there.
Well,
I think if we even touched one of them, the whole place would go down at that point. So there was a bit of sort of like structural reinforcement, but we put the place back in like sympathetically. And it's probably been, you know, as much as I can say about, you know, like working in places and stuff, it was the best time of my career, just taking those sort of like 9 months actually out of the kitchen and seeing another trade. Like, I was on site with like electricians and plumbers and joiners and stuff, and seeing this place completely ripped to, like, I can't describe how much I say, like, it was like, you see places that are like, oh yeah, we've done a full refurb, like every single floorboard came out, every single bit of plasterboard, every insulation, every pipe, every bit of electricity, we rewired, replumbed everything, and it was like a 7-bedroom 16th century lodge, and we put in absolutely everything back in brand new, the kitchen, the restaurant, the bar, everything. It was so scary, like horrendously scary, especially on my shoulders as well, because it's like, okay, we're going to take apart this bit of history in Sky, because I didn't know anything about it, but it had run into disrepair, but it's the oldest continuously occupied building in Sky. So like, it's got history in itself. But to get this sort of boost of confidence from my dad that he wanted to invest in me and I was to go into business with him.
Yeah.
Just really cool, but then terrifying opening, like terrifying. Like, I remember we'd put out, like, once we finally did the refurb and stuff, we put up a thing and it was like, oh, you know, phone lines open on August 13th for reservations. Let us know. That, you know, like, and I'm thinking like, oh yeah, this is going to be really good. We'll book out the restaurant for like 2 months or whatever. And I'm there in like my old clothes after we've like painted the whole place and we're just about ready to go, 2 weeks away from opening or something. It's like, the phone book opens on Monday, 9 a.m. That's it. And I'm there waiting by the phone. I think like 11:30 a.m. somebody phoned. I'll shout her out because I know her pretty well now. I didn't at the time. A lady called Grace Muir from Glasgow. I've told her this story already. She's like, oh my God, I'm 2.5 hours late. Is there any tables left for the 14th of November? I'm
you're just in luck.
Let me go and get the diary. Just, can you put you on hold for a minute? And I'm like, okay, how many are you looking for? And those first few weeks were really scary because it's right into the middle of the season in Sky. Like, August is just like peak season. But what really happens here is like people just book out like so far in advance. And that's what happened to us really, is like those first few weeks were just like, you know, there was a lot of soft openings. There was a lot of friends and family coming in and stuff. But yeah, we got there and like, this is us 8 years in and, you know, couldn't be happier. And the restaurant's basically full most nights. And it's really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. So you're dinner only.
You're dinner only now. Yeah.
So for your guests, I would imagine.
Yeah. So we're 7 days a week open, but 5 days in the restaurant. So we've toyed about with a lot of things throughout the years. We've been 4 days a week open. We've been 5 days a week open. Like I said, it's, you know, it's me writing the rule book, and it's me always looking with the staff first and foremost. Is like, what's going to be best for them? And and if they're good, the food's going to be good. If they're good, the guests are going to be good. And I always look as that as being the absolute pinnacle of importance. Like, looking after the staff, making sure they're happy, making sure that staff food is like shit hot, making sure that they're really looked after. So when we came out of COVID, we dropped down to 4 days. And I was like, that's the team that's going to be on, that's it. But now we put like optional 4 day a week contracts. And then we switched that again. And just something that always burned me right the way throughout hospitality, all the time, my entire career, you'd be on however many thousand it was a year on a 40-hour week contract. And like I said there, you'd be working 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, still getting paid for 40.
Yeah.
There's not many places, there's not many jobs in the world that do that. I don't know if there's any outside of hospitality. Well, there probably is, but there's not many.
Yeah.
So we made the big switch last year. And for all staff that work with us, whatever hour you work here, you're getting paid. You know, it's not even jumping into overtime or anything like that. So if you work 45 hours a week, you're getting paid for doing 45 hours a week. If you work 60 hours a week, you're getting paid for doing 60 hours a week. If you do 35, you're doing that.
Yeah.
And then we switched to seasonal business as well. So we have to look at it all the time. It's like, is it worth opening? Do we need to open? Is it cost effective to close? You know, like, so there's lots of constraints with working in Sky. There's lots of benefits. You know, in July, we could probably sell the restaurant three times over. In November, we'd be lucky to get 10% of the people in.
Yeah.
So we need to, we looked at it all, every year. I changed my, not changed my mind on it every year, but like, what can we do better yet next year? How can we be a better business next year? How can we be a better restaurant next year? How can we be a better employer next year? And that's how we always look at it. So at the moment, pretty cool. We're 7 days a week open in the rooms. It's a huge outcry for accommodation in Sky. So we offer the rooms 7 days a week, because if you try to book a room in Sky tomorrow, good luck. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's full, like 2-3 months out. So yeah, we leave the rooms open. We offer them a bed and breakfast rate only for 7 days. But we used to operate as a Wednesday to Sunday restaurant. And the big key there is consistency. I want to be here when the restaurant's open. The rest of the restaurant staff want to be here when the restaurant's open. So we know that if you come in on a Thursday or a Saturday or whatever day, it's going to be consistent. It's going to be the same. It's going to be those guys cooking for you. It's going to be really good. And then I looked at how busy Sky is throughout the summer months. And we'd be just as busy on a Wednesday as we'd be on a Saturday. We'd be just as busy on a Thursday as we are Sunday. So then I have to look at it as a chef. I have to look at it as an employer. And I'm a father now as well. I've got a wee 5-year-old girl. And she's going to be off at weekends. And I've never had weekends off as a chef. And not many other people, I don't think, as chefs can really say that either. But we're in the business position now that we have a really, you know, like, last year named as Scottish Restaurant of the Year. I've got a few sort of like personal accolades myself and stuff. We're a 4 Rosette restaurant. We're exceptional in the Good Food Guides. 5 out of 5 in Hardin's. We're on the list. Maybe people are just looking at this restaurant as not somewhere to come on a Saturday, Sunday. Maybe they'd come on a Monday, Tuesday. So we switched now, and now we're Monday to Friday open, dinner only, which is really pretty unique for it some a restaurant like us.
A big, in principle, a big risk. Like, you know, Saturday is a prime time day to, you know, move away from.
Yeah, you'd look at that, but we looked at all our figures, and actually, it was just the same. It's not like a big weekend vibe in Sky. Like, yeah, but to be honest, like, locals will go out the weekend and stuff, but if you're away for like 4 days or whatever with your family, is a Saturday any different than a Tuesday? Is it, you know, I always think that, like, if we've went away to like Mexico or the States or something like that, we're not thinking like, oh, let's leave this till Saturday till we go out. We're on holiday. You're having in so much tourism here, you know, and we're like, okay, also there's so many restaurants that are closed on that Monday, Tuesday. So we're filling that gap as well. Yeah. So actually we're sort of adding to Sky, because you could go anywhere on a Saturday, Sunday, but you could maybe go and go to about 75% of the places on a Monday, Tuesday. And we're just filling that gap in there as well. So it makes so much sense for us. Like, it's great for the staff. It's great for me and my wife and my wee girl. It's great for the customers. And actually it's better for produce too. There's way more fishermen out on a Monday, Tuesday than there is on a Saturday, Sunday. And they could be in the same pub that I am in the Saturday, Sunday.
Well, very good. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Just make sure before you go anywhere else that you just stop by on our gaff on Monday.
We're negotiating lobster prices in the Tongadale on that Saturday. You know, it's
all the best deals happening in the pub.
The Tongadale's a pub, just in case you're wondering that.
Right.
But no, it's made total sense for us. And we made the switch on the 1st of May. And we actually had the busiest month that we've ever had last month. And, you know, I'm not going to put that down to the fact that we switched to Monday to Friday. It's just because we're operating at a very high level just now, and we're doing very well, and Sky is doing very well. It's like a very, very busy place just now. But it was very encouraging to see that it didn't hamper anything. And I think that we've definitely made the right move with it, particularly because, like I've said it 4 or 5 times already, staff are everything to me. I can talk about how nice this place is, and we've got 5-star restaurant rooms. It's a historic building. We're serving this. We're doing that. If the people that are doing it are not interested in it, and the people that are doing it are not passionate about it, there's just no point. With our type of restaurant, there's just no point. And it makes or breaks places. It can change a good experience into an amazing experience. It can change an amazing experience into an awful one. And everyone that works here as well are just good people, which is so important to me. I'm here every day with them. We've got an absolute no dickheads policy. Stole that one from Mark Donald because that's the funniest thing I've ever heard on a job advert.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's most of true,
like,
right?
You know, I mean, like, if you're going to be here and you're going to be part of the team and you want to help us achieve the things we want to achieve, you need to be sound too. Like, you need to be a cool person. You need to be, you know, you need to be with us in the, like, we're like a train here. Like, we're going one direction. If you're going to, you know, you need to get behind us. And that's what happens. And that's why we just keep going from strength to strength as well.
Look, I mean, I'm listening as a fan from the outside, and I've not, do you know, I've never been to Sky. That's horrific.
No way.
Horrific.
You can probably kick a football from Tyree and Hitzke.
You don't even have to go on a boat. You could just drive over the bridge.
You just come up and see us. Oh, there you go. I say this to this all the time. Come and see us.
Yeah. Indeed, there's another one, right? But it's so far away, you know.
I'm not paying for your plane ticket, but I might give you a glass of Coke.
Iron brew. No, that's cool. Look, I'm listening to your story. I'm listening to the story of Edinbane Lodge. The story of, I suppose, you have a business brain through your training, probably as well, through seeing your dad flourish as a business owner, through probably the negative stuff he went through as much as the positive stuff, and that resilience that you just naturally build. But actually, for me, the phrase that just came into my head was, "You've won hospitality, mate, with your approach." Because all of that's great and it's fine, but if you're not then it seems like you have this kind of ability to put yourself into the shoes of the person, whether that's a member of your team or your guest or whatever, whoever you need, your supplier, whatever. Like that, having that is golden, because none of this works if one of those things falls down. So, you know, you've got to make every part of that as robust as possible.
Yeah, indeed. And like I said, that is what I try to do all the time. I don't even try to do it. I just do it. You know, it's like, what's really cool, but I'm not always, from a guest point of view as well, I want to be the guest that wants to, it's not always what they want to eat as well. So I want it from a guest's experience, but I want them to eat things that they maybe aren't familiar with.
Yeah.
Whereas I've experienced something, or then come up with something, I'm like, okay, you're not getting a choice in this. You need to try this. Like that's where the tasting menu comes in, which is so cool. And then we've put along a 3-course menu now this year as well for people that are maybe wanting to dip their toe into the water, into the sort of food that we do and things like that. But I kind of jumped on it earlier as like, I just will not send anything out of here that I don't love to eat myself. Like, I'm not going to be putting on, like, I don't like goat's cheese or stuff like that. Like, I'm not going to be, oh, well, the guests will love goat's cheese, so we're going to do that. I wouldn't do that element of it.
Yeah.
But something that they're looking for, that's something I'm really passionate about, and I'm like, look, you, like, sometimes I wouldn't even, like, introduce courses. Like, we'll just send something out, it's not even the menu. Like, the other night, I mean, this is where the bad business sense comes in, and this is where my passion comes in on top. So, like, somebody phoned me, and they're like, I've got the biggest langoustines you've ever seen. Like, do you want them? I was like, right, okay. But we've already got all the prep ready for the menu. So on Friday, literally everybody that was dining with us just got an extra course of double XL langoustine just with a butter sauce.
Lord.
But it wasn't even the menu, because it was like 5 o'clock at night. And I was like, right, everyone stop what you're doing. We're prepping these langoustines now, and we're getting them on tonight. And that's terrible business sense, right?
I disagree. Like, in the short term, perhaps, like from a cash flow perspective.
We're leaving, we're leaving an experience there as well, of course. Yeah. But like, I just want to get it and send it and be like, just proud. I just want to be proud of everything we do. I'm so proud of like all of our staff. I'm proud of our crockery. Like, our crockery comes from next door. It's from Edinbane. Like, I was saying about kicking a football. I literally could kick a football off our main plate supplier next door. Like, it's nuts. It's good for our KPs as well. Because like, I say this to people all the time, if they smash a plate, like, they know exactly where they're going with their tips. Yeah. Don't actually make them do that often. But fine dining is passion first. You know, like, it's got to be passion first. And then we make the numbers work. And then we make the logistics work. And then we start off with the main ideas, like, how's this like Rolls Royce experience going to start? And then what budget have we got, and how can we meet in the middle until, you know, we create this really memorable experience for everyone? And that's what it's all about for me. And sorry, like, jumping back on what I was saying there, I meant to come back and say at the end, the coolest thing for me, if anyone's actually still listening now, because I've been waffling on so much. Throughout my like entire story, the biggest thing I ever wanted to do was just work with my dad. And instead of jumping into his ship of a cleaning business and running his business, I've went away and found something that I'm just super passionate about and love. And instead of me taking over from him, he wanted to invest in me. And like, I had loads of, I actually had quite a few other options on the table then. And I really enjoy squashing this to people about, like, you can look at this as like, oh, he said his dad said money, so he's investing them, so he can do that. You have no fucking idea how scary that is. Like, I could have taken a job at a 5-star hotel with a Michelin star restaurant and played about with their budgets and done, tried to do this or tried to do that, or take the lease in another property or look at whatever. Instead, I'm gambling every single day with everything that my dad has worked his entire life for. And he chose to look at what I'm doing to actually try and get some return back on this as well. Like, there's, it's not like just some pocket money on the side. Like, this is everything. Like, this is our family business now. Like, this is, every single day counts. It's not some like luxurious thing. Like, oh, let's just throw a load of money at this. It's not that. It's a business. Like, this is a business that every single day matters, that every single bum on seat matters here. Like, this is like the hardest time for hospitality ever. And we screwed the numbers over everything. We have all sorts of things and look into it. I'm painting this as like it's the most ideal situation. And it is, because I'm living my dream job. I'm living my dream here. I'm doing everything I ever wanted to. But it is scary. And it is like you're dealing with like people are spending a lot of money when they come in here. But like our food costs are like high. Like our staff costs are high. Like we want to look after people. We want to look after the ingredients. And it's, There's fine margins there all the time. And we have to make those adjustments throughout the winter as well. You know, as much as I'm talking about, oh, these are all the positives, like, there's no one in the sky between, like, November, January, February, March. This business just hemorrhages money throughout there. So then we had to look at that before. It's like, are we opening the doors because we're opening them? Or are we opening them because we're, like, we would just lose money throughout the winter completely. Yeah. So it's, like, safer to shut. Like, safer as in, I mean, like, safer to be, like, so that's, as, again, it's, like, it worked for us and it worked for the staff to switch to these like hourly contracts. So it's like, okay, you can come and, we've had people come and work for us now, like they'll come and work throughout the summer and they want 60, 65 hours. And I'm like, look, as long as you're not going to burn out, that's cool. Like, that's great. You're going to get paid for it. And then in the winter, they can either take 2 months off and chill, take three, last year, a couple of them took 4 months off and chill. They just like saved up throughout the winter, throughout the month, throughout the summer. But some other people are, they'll work all the way throughout the summer with us and they'll find another job throughout the winter doing agency work, or they'll do, you know, go away and do cabins and do ski resorts and stuff like that, or stage other places. The most important thing and the coolest thing for me is they come back.
Yeah.
And they've come back. And we have the same team now that we had last year. And when we made that switch, because that's like a scary move to make too. But yeah, putting like a bow on what I'm saying is like, when I was younger, the only thing I wanted to do was like work for my dad. And now I'm working with my dad. And he's just like basically like a silent partner with this, but he has like the best business mind going. Like I jumped to him for so much advice with everything. But he's also very sort of like hands off. He trusts me and like I know what we're doing through here. And when we started off, we had different business partners and stuff like that. And now it's I've got my general manager, Katie, now, who looks after so much admin as well, which is great for me because I'm pretty you know, like it gives me more time to focus on like really progressing the business and other PR opportunities and getting our name out there. I just even like coming down to London to do HRC, it's cool. And yeah. I've want to sing and shout about Sky, you know, hopefully you've seen throughout there when I was doing that demo. Sky, I'm talking about first and foremost, and then it's Edinburgh after that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that totally comes across, and totally, you know, you're almost like an extension of each other. You know, Sky's providing you with this wonderment, and you're turning it into something that people can have an experience with. But equally, there's a role reversal in there as well, is that, you know, you're basically just looking after each other in a weird way. But you know, the thing that I was kind of really drawn to when you and I met was your, I mean, you've just got passion coming out. You're like every pore that you have in terms of every word that comes out. I think people would just get on board with and understand that you're not. This is not something you're playing with. This is something that comes from the heart, and that's magnetic. That whether you know it is absolutely magnetic for people to kind of hear that, see that, and you definitely made a fan out of me for sure. And I will definitely come for that Iron Brew at some point. I wish you guys continued success. I think it sounds like you've built something really special there, and look forward to hearing how that progresses from there.
Thanks a lot.
Good man.
Cheers.
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 Well, what an absolute treat it was to spend some time with Callum, a man whose passion for his craft, his island and his team shines through in every single word. It's not every day you hear such a grounded, honest and inspiring journey from scrubbing pots at 14 to building a destination restaurant with his own bare hands. His commitment to showing the very best of Skye and doing right by his people is nothing short of inspiration. A massive thank you to Callum for sharing his story and his time, especially in the middle of peak season madness. We will of course be back next month with another cracking conversation, so until then, take care of yourselves and we'll see you in July.